Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us for another episode on the Speak As Well As You Think podcast. Today, we want to talk about the three most important things that we think you should keep in mind when it comes to having effective communication and being able to communicate externally with other people. So to start, I always think the first most important piece is understanding who your audience is so that we can tailor that information specifically for them. John, you want to take that a little further?
Yeah, as we think about understanding your audience, really, I look at it as having a grocery list. When you go to the grocery store, you have a list so that you know what things you need to get for the week in terms of making food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But if you go to the grocery store with no list, you end up wandering around and you end up just grabbing things that look good in the moment. And then we've all done it. We've all been there before. We get home, we unpack the grocery bag, and we think, this is maybe a meal's worth of food, and maybe not even that. It's a whole bunch of snacks. There's not really anything that I can put together to make now as a meal. So I tell people, when we think about understanding your audience, it's looking at the big picture, and it might feel like zoning out to begin with. Zoning out meaning pulling yourself back and looking, who exactly am I going to be speaking with? And then figuring out, what's my purpose in speaking with them? Because as soon as we can identify those two things, then we can begin zooming back in really focusing and tailoring and adjusting and tinkering. How do we build the message with this type of audience in mind? And Matt, I know you've shared a couple different analogies or anecdotes related to understanding your audience. Pass it over to you to give any input there.
Yeah, I think one of our good anecdotes, and this is even better for our podcast listeners currently at home, over the probably past year or 18 months or so, our podcast itself has kind of shape-shifted a little bit in the format that we work with, the way that we go through our open dialogue and such. And a lot of that is in part to us just shifting over to knowing our audience, what types of people are listening to these podcasts, what their general niche that they're listening for is looking for, and going based off of that. It's no longer us saying, okay, it's just good enough to talk about our skills that we have and the tips and tricks that we have, but now we have to take away that generalization and specialize it into the field that we're actually working in. Here, it's into that podcast, and that's where we see kind of those format tweaks and some of those differentiations in what we're actually talking about with that subject matter to make sure we're hitting the mark with the population that's listening to our podcast and not just the entire general population that's working with our brand as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like to look at it. I use this analogy pretty frequently. It's like packing a suitcase for a trip. Doesn't matter the trip you go on. It can be a vacation. It can be a work trip, or it can be an overnight. But anytime we've taken a trip, and any of our listeners who have taken trips before, typically do some research around where they're going.
Mm-hmm.
What's the weather going to be like? What am I going to be doing while I'm in this place or on this trip or on this vacation? But very few of us just leave throwing a whole bunch of stuff into a bag and hoping, geez, I really hope the weather cooperates because I've got two pairs of shorts, one pair of underwear, a couple pairs of socks and a shirt. That's going to make for a really tough trip, no matter how you look at it. And so as we think about packing our bags, if you will, there's a little bit of research that goes into it in terms of checking what is the weather like for the next 2 or 3 days? What are mornings going to be like, afternoons and evenings? And then what's on my agenda for whatever said trip might be? But as we think about packing for a trip or packing for a vacation, we need to do the same thing as we think about our audience. It's figuring out, what is my audience going to be interested in? What do they want to learn or understand? Or what am I trying to recommend to them? And then from there, I'm packing or building the message, quote unquote, with that audience or that end destination in mind.
And I think a big piece of that leads back to, we're not packing for the same trip every
right.
time we go on it. All of us, well, at least us two, know the amount that we travel, the amount of times we're going to different clients. we don't pack our bags the exact same way every single time. Each client is in a different location, whether our physical bags are packed differently or whether our content-based bags with how we're tailoring that session, what their audience is interested in, what their organizational needs are, we're doing this a little bit differently each time we go through it. If we deliver that same stock presentation or, like you said, pack those same stock bags, odds are we're not going to have the correct outfits, we're not going to have the right technology to go through the sessions, and we're not going to be covering those organizational needs that our clients are looking for.
Yeah. And I really like that analogy. And one of the ones we use in our program that's a really simplified version, when you're a speaker, imagine yourself as a tour guide. Mm-hmm. What is the goal of a tour guide? It's to make sure that people have an enjoyable time, ideally. They learn something along the way. And the most important piece, all 15 people are still with you by the time you finish that tour. So if you leave with 15 people, you want 15 people to be with you at the end. The same thing is true when we're speaking to an audience. If we start speaking to a group of 15 people, I hope all 15 people are still listening to me by the time I get to that summary wrap up. I'm going to open it up for questions now section of my talk. So structuring it in a way that I can think about, I'd like them to leave saying that was worthwhile. I think that's probably as close as we can get to having fun, if you will, within a business presentation. I want them to learn something along the way, whether it's a request or a recommendation I have for them as a next step, or it's an update, something they need to be aware of. And then again, I want to make sure that it's easy for them to follow from start to finish, and they're actually interested in continuing to listen and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
So step number one is understanding who your audience is. What do we see as the most important step number two?
Yeah, Jen, I'll take this one. I like simplification. I think really, again, we have to boil down and figure out what's the minimum effective dose or minimum effective load, if we've heard that phrasing before. I read Tim Ferriss's book, 4-Hour Body, probably 15 years ago now. And he talks in that book about this concept he calls that the minimum effective dose. And he looks at it through the lens of minimum effective load. But same idea, it's really simple, the smallest dose that will produce the desired outcome.
Mm-hmm.
In society today, a lot of us confuse more with better. And if you've listened along to our podcast, you've heard this conversation discussed at length. People confusing, the more I add, the better this is going to be. Or the more I talk, or the more complex I make this, the smarter I'll come across.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, yes, if what I'm adding more of is in fact adding value for the audience, then that's great. But there comes a point where just adding more for the sake of adding more doesn't do any positives. And instead, I like to think, not how much more can I add? When is there nothing left for me to take away? Mm. When have I stripped the message down to a concise, a succinct, a consumable level? If my audience wants more, they'll ask for it. And as soon as they give that green light, I can provide more context, more depth. For most people that communicate around a subject matter, they know that subject matter at length. And if they don't, they'll hopefully say, I don't have enough information about this to go any deeper down that hole. So I'm leaving it right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think simplifying content is ultimately what makes an audience feel as though time was well spent for them. But if they get inundated with information or, you know, fire hosed with content because the speaker just thinks, well, the more I add to this fire, the more roaring the fire is going to end up being. I think that's where people get themselves in trouble and either end up rambling, wandering, talking themselves in circles, or you open yourself up to a whole bunch of different rabbit holes that can in turn take you further away from the destination or the point you were trying to get to in the first place.
Right.
And I think we love to frame that as what's need to know, what's nice to know.
Mm-hmm.
What does our audience need to know in order to make their decision? What is additional or process oriented or more of how that sausage is made? I like to give a little nod to my late father. His favorite quote used to be when someone was telling one of these elongated stories, quit circling the runway and land the plane.
Yeah.
Essentially saying, I understand where you're getting to. I understand where you're coming from. Now let's give me that conclusion so that we can both get out of here. Knowing that a 5-minute conversation where I get all of the information is significantly better than a 10-minute conversation where I get that same suite of information. We all know that the most valuable thing in our entire day and the most valuable thing in business is our time. It's something we can't get back and something we can't physically buy. Therefore, making sure that we're being courteous and acknowledging other people's is going to be the best way to get them back in the room with us afterwards as well. It's the most effective thing you can do is try to get them back in the room again for a second conversation, because that's when you know, odds are, they liked the way I was speaking the first time.
Yeah. I really like to, as we think about simplification, being able to talk about something simply means you are really intimate with your information. So you have to have a good base knowledge of it, because most people can talk about things at a complex level, but simplifying it and making it easy for an audience to understand is actually a really hard thing to do, depending on what it is you're talking about. So the more you can think about, how do I explain this high level, knowing that I can go into detail and explain it ad nauseum or in depth, but being able to take it up those five steps and say, what I really like to compare this to is X. And then being able to do that to make it relatable for your audience is an art. And it's something that more and more people are saying, I'd like to be described as concise. I would like to be described as effective, on message, direct. So there's a lot of different words that lead to that simplification. And it starts with you being able to understand your information and then share it that way as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why we ask the question, any of our listeners who have gone through executive communication skills with us, whether virtual or in person, how do you want to be described?
Yeah.
It's very common for people to say, John, I want to be clear, concise, knowledgeable, succinct. Those words have rang true for the 14 years that I've been doing the coaching, 12 years that you've been doing a gen, and certainly, Matt, the last 2 years for yourself. Those are common responses to that question when we ask it. Mm-hmm. If we know our audience that we're interacting with or the speakers that we're helping coach and develop their skill set want to be described in that way, we also know that audiences who are being spoken with or spoken to want to receive messaging from a speaker who is clear, concise, and succinct.
Right.
And back to the point of simplification, at the end of the day, if you can take all of the knowledge you have around something, but make it easy to understand, succinct, clear, concise, and then that audience consumes it, that's a job well done. That's a superpower in the communication space.
And I have to say, it's one of the biggest things that I've taken from being a coach of kids that are in high school, and I'm sure Jen has taken it from being a school teacher. It's very much the same thing. We have to sometimes wrap our heads around, a lot of the time, we're going to be the subject matter expert at the front of the room. We are going to know things in their highest complexity better than anybody else in that room does at this point or possibly ever could, which means we need to break it down, even if we're talking to adults, almost to feel as though we're talking to kids. It's going to be a lot easier for them to connect those dots and to start to climb that ladder of complexity rather than starting in a super complex area, losing them right away, and them saying, well, that was a total waste of my time.
Yeah. I even love to think about it through the lens of building a piece of furniture or building anything, whatever it is. The instructions always start with something silly, like open up all of the components. And for most people, it's like, I don't even know why that's step one. Of course, that's the first thing you would do. But I bet you there's at least half the people out there that don't start with that as step one. And then all of a sudden they're trying to figure things out and build it halfway through, when instructions are there for a reason. It's supposed to walk you through, on the most simplified version, how to be successful doing something. So you can think about your presentations, your meetings, your talks, call it whatever you want, as organizing it in a way that I am sharing some level of quote unquote instructions with you. And I want it to be as simple as possible for you to move from step one to step two, from step two to step three, and so on and so forth through all 35 steps that I might have.
Yeah. Any and every effective coach out there, it doesn't matter what they're coaching, swim lessons, Olympic lifting, speaking skills, running skills, know the importance of simple.
Yeah.
And for the same way, any of us as parents who have taught or are trying to teach our kids, everyday basics, tying your shoes, using the bathroom, anything like that, it's simple. keep it very simple, and it's not dumbing it down. I tend to not love that phrase when people say, John, so you just want me to dumb the message down? No, I don't like the way that negative connotation feels. It's making it simple for your audience to understand.
Right.
It's not treating anybody like they're dumb. It's just saying, hey, let me make this easy for you to understand, or let me simplify this back, because you may know it at a very complex level. That does nothing for the people who are trying to understand it in a different way or for the first time. Simplifying the message is what typically ends up getting us to that end destination, which is effective communication.
And we do get a lot of clients that say, well, you know, my audience is expecting more detail. And that's why simplification is step two and understanding your audience is step one, because you need to know who your audience is. I can't go in with a super high level 5-minute conversation if I'm talking to a technical group that's expecting to know how to use this platform when the meeting is over. That means you didn't do the first step in enough efficiency in order to know now how do I, there's still ways to simplify technical information if that's what the audience needs. But you always have to understand who your audience is first, and then you go into what does simplification mean for that specific audience. As Matt mentioned, it's not the same message to every single group. So even though I'm talking about the same thing, I might move between three different audiences, and that level of detail and information, the simplification process, is going to look different for each of those, even though I'm sharing that same information.
Yeah. And I also love, I hear this often when people say, John, my audience wants it technical, or my audience expects to hear it complex. Have they told you they wanted it technical? Yeah. Or have they asked you to do it complex? Because if you're just assuming, well, this is a group of engineers, and so they're expecting the complexities. Are they though? Because if they're not, and if they haven't said so, then they probably want it simply. Even if they understand the intricacies of it, that doesn't mean that that's the way they want it delivered to them or shoved down their throats every time that you speak. So it's a great point, Jen, that ties back. Understanding your audience continues to take the precedence, because that's what's going to help you create those guideposts on saying, what does simplification, complexity, technical language, what does that look like or sound like for this group in mind?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so step two, simplifying your information. And then we move into the next step, or the third step in the process of being an effective communicator. What do we think step three is?
And I'll grab this one. I think that one of those buzzwords that we always say is executive presence. I really think that number three here is general presence, knowing what your own presence is. This is multifaceted, a little bit more multifaceted than the know your audience step or our simplify step there. Because one, depending on your overall environment, where you're presenting from, where you work from, your presence is going to shift. But also, it's more about knowing those strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. What am I good at? Where am I comfortable? What is going to work out for me the best in terms of pieces that I'm trying to accomplish or pieces that I'm trying to go through? And making sure that we prioritize our time or our presence or our image around those items.
Mm-hmm.
One of the pieces that comes to mind immediately when I think about that is we have a lot of people that work virtually and in person, and they treat their lives essentially exactly the same, both virtually and in person. When you're in person, odds are you're in an office that's cleaned for you. You have the same background behind you every single day. There's a window as a backdrop and whatever else behind you. When you're at home, you have to remember that there's other things behind you that are part of your home. You have to remember to bring your work self a little bit to that area of your home to make sure that your presence in your background, in your presence as you're speaking, matches whatever else it is that you're actually saying, or that same image that you would want to show in person. What I like to call it is authenticity. At the end of the day, what we really want you to do is be yourself. We don't want you to stretch yourself. We don't want you to feel robotic in the things that we teach, the things that we preach. A lot of the questions that I often get in my courses are, oh, so I'm supposed to do this in exactly this way or with exactly these skills. And I almost always say, no, we want you to adapt this to a way that works the best for you and that is the most comfortable for you. The number one example of this is with our prompts. Some of our prompts and some of our activities, people always say, this lead-in, do I need to use this? Do I need to say this? Never. Whatever lead in's the most authentic for you, however you feel starting your sentences, transitioning, and doing these other things is the most authentic to you, is often the best way to go through it. Because when these people get you outside of a presentation or outside of a meeting room, they're going to see the real version of you.
Right.
We want that to be the same on both sides of that eight ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good point too, Matt, to note that it's specific to you. For our listeners, for those of you that tune in every month, you hear John, Matt, and I speak all the time. Now it's a podcast, so you can't see us on this end, but we all use the skills the exact same way. But John sounds different than I do. I sound different than Matt does. Matt sounds different than John. So all of us have, we use the same eye contact. We use the same hand gestures. Again, those things you can't see, the same posture. Our vocal energy, we're all in that 7-8 space, what we're shooting to be. But yet none of us are a carbon copy of each other. If you've taken classes in person with us, if we've all been together, you've been able to see the difference between all three of us when we get in the front of the room. Again, the skill set is still there and it still remains the same for each person that we coach, but we bring each of our uniquenesses to it. So the goal is not to create a carbon copy. It's to give you a skill set that works and then adapting it and adjusting it to you, your personality. And then as Matt mentioned, what is your culture? Some cultures are very laid back. Jeans is as fancy as things get and nobody stands to speak. Other cultures are still business professional, a suit and tie every single day. And if you're not on your feet, you better be sick or you better be injured. So there's this variation in what is expected of me? How do I show up? And then how do I stay true to who I am? So as Matt mentioned, you don't get one version of me in the front of the room. And then we stop and have a conversation in the hallway. And you think to yourself, huh, I wonder where Jen went. Cause this is not even close to the same person that I just saw, for better or worse.
Yeah. It's the same way we describe. You can look at the entire Professional Golf Association. All the golfers out there at the top of their craft golfing have different techniques. They have different swings. They have different putting mechanisms. They have different mechanics when they use their short game. They're still at the top of their craft. But the same way that no two running techniques are identical, no two swimming techniques are identical, you can listen to two rock bands that are in the rock genre and might play completely and entirely different styles of rock. So again, I love the fact that it's own your executive presence or own your presence, because it does ring true to being sincere, genuine, authentic. It's you being you and not you trying to be somebody else, because that gets picked apart pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And most audiences will not like to hear or see someone that doesn't seem like they're comfortable or being themselves. For whatever reason, that just begins to bring about questions on credibility or tying back to authenticity. People hear that and think, I know that's not John in the front of the room. That's somebody else, or that's John trying to be somebody else. We can all be ourselves using skills.
Yeah.
But the presence skills are universal. We've all got access to eye contact, hand gestures, and physical skills if we are on site in person. Virtually, if we don't have cameras active, for obvious reasons, it's more the vocal skills that exist. But as we listen to speakers, we are all listening to some variation of volume, some variation of inflection, some variation of pace, and we're hopeful that we're not hearing an abundance of ums, uhs, likes, and you knows. Because we know those get in the way for our audience in terms of how they receive or consume our message.
Yep.
But end of the day, the physical skills and the vocal skills don't shift all that much. It's the environments that change and then how those skills get adapted, or it's the personal, stylistic, cultural approaches that might differ or shift. And you play to the audience. You play to the setting. You play to the golf course. You can use a bunch of different analogies there. But you execute the skills based on where and what you're trying to accomplish or what you need to get out of whatever the scenario might be.
And I do want to touch on the implementation dip. So while you are learning a new skill, there is a certain point where it does not feel natural. It feels forced. It doesn't feel good to you. Don't take that as an indication that this is not me, so I shouldn't do this. You can still use your skill set and your authenticity, your uniqueness, call it whatever you'd like, learning something new and going through this implementation dip where the new skill set doesn't feel great. The old way I was doing it, I know it's not as effective because I've received feedback that I could improve on this area. And now that way feels kind of wonky too. So I'm stuck in this. Now what do I do? I feel like I should just go back to what I was doing because it was more comfortable. But don't take that as a sign of this isn't me, so I'm not going to do it. You can still be you while strengthening some of those skills. For somebody that typically speaks at a 4 or 5 volume, getting them to speak at a 7 or 8 will feel extremely uncomfortable, unnatural, like they're hollering and they're trying to be somebody they aren't. But they'll actually find that they're probably more effective and they're getting better feedback as they start to work up towards that volume. It's not going to be comfortable the first, second, fifth, 10th time they do it. It will take some time to acquire that, but keep pushing through that. Don't get confused with thinking that that is my indication to stop and go back.
Yeah. For the same reason a child learning how to walk is going to fall. They don't just decide, I fell, this isn't for me.
Right.
And so if any of us have read Atomic Habits by James Clear, he's got a quote in chapter one, and I love this quote. I've got it saved. Habits often appear to make no difference until you cross a critical threshold and unlock a new level of performance. In the early and middle stages of any quest, there is often a valley of disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
You expect to make progress in a linear fashion, and it's frustrating how ineffective changes can seem during the first days, weeks, sometimes even months. It doesn't feel like you're going anywhere. It is a hallmark of any compounding process. The most powerful outcomes are delayed. And so this is where I know Jen and Matt have said the same thing I've said to participants who are in courses with us. Trust the process.
Yeah.
Stick to the game. That's what you're doing here, is playing the long game. I realize that the changes are not going to happen or exist overnight. But if you can hang in there and you can continue, do what we call chase repetitions. Don't chase perfection, because perfect isn't a desired outcome, because it's not realistic. Chase reps, because that's what's going to help get you to that effective state where you say, I can do this now. It's on autopilot and I am soaring with the skill set.
And a big piece of what it goes back to is our presence is all mental. It's how well we believe in the fact that we can do it. We see every single day in all of our sessions, people who trip over words or make quick mistakes. And right after that first mistake, it's, oh man, I didn't mean to say that. Can I start over? When in reality, if you just continue moving, nobody's really going to notice. If you continue to own that presence, nobody's going to notice that one word, because as we talked about before, we normally know our information at a more complex level, to the point where those little missteps and those little misreads aren't something that our audience is even catching when we're going through it. What I always tell my audiences and most of my clients is that whenever we're standing up at the front of the room, we are up there for a reason. We're in our role, in our job for a reason. And it's likely because we handle whatever information we're about to present more than anybody else at the company does, which means we have to have the confidence of, I know this information better than pretty much everybody else sitting in front of me. Yep. And that normally is a good enough way to start to ease yourself into feeling okay with the skills in front of that audience, no matter whether you make a slight hiccup or you're not 100% sure of your general confidence.
Yeah, great points. And I think John has mentioned, you know, looking at kids a couple of time here, I think that's a great instance of learning something new and acquiring that executive presence or presence in general. A kid learning to ride a bike falls far more often than they actually get it right. And they are determined each and every time to get back up and try it again, get back up and figure it out. Now, a particularly nasty fall, perhaps they give it a little day break in between, but the same thing happens, or the same thing should be the process for adults. Yes, it's uncomfortable. It doesn't feel good to quote unquote fail, especially publicly in front of other people. But your ability to get back up and try it again and keep fine tuning it, that's what makes or breaks somebody who's excellent at what they do because they didn't give up, and somebody that is fine at what they do, but they could be better. They just don't like having that, being in that uncomfortable space or trying to acquire something that doesn't feel natural to them.
Yeah. I've used the acronym FAIL before. Fantastic attempt in learning.
Yep.
And I think if people continue to look and try to focus on that lens, realizing it's not about executing perfection, because that may not be realistic anyways. But if it doesn't go exactly as planned, guess what it was? It was a learning opportunity. It was an attempt in learning. And now the next time you do whatever said thing is, you make adjustments. The same reason if you run your first 5K and totally blow up and end up the last mile having to walk because you came out of the gates racing hot. Next time you sign up for that 5K, I bet you won't start out of the gates racing hot. Yep. And you will have learned a lesson and realized, okay, hang on a second. This is a 3.1 mile race. I need to maybe take my first mile a little bit easier. So I've got something to give at the very last quarter mile, half a mile, whatever we want to use for that analogy.
Yeah. Great points. All right. So our top three most important skills to be an effective communicator. First, understand who your audience is. Second, based on that audience, how do I simplify content so that it makes sense for them and it's the easiest for them to follow along with and understand? And then third, owning your presence, figuring out what presence you would like to bring to the table, what's appropriate for the setting and meeting, and then how do I continue to improve and sharpen that presence and skill set as you move through and continue to communicate in different areas. As always, if there's another communications topic you would like to hear us talk about, please feel free to send us an email and we'll get that in the rotation for the future. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.